It's not just about watching the game. It's about betting on it. I'm Mike Valeni, and on Cash the Ticket, Jim Costa and I break down every college football and NFL matchup like it's the last game we're ever going to watch, from the best bets to the sneaky underdogs. And of course, as my co-host likes to say, the value. And the one thing we're not going to do is pretend we're professionals. We have fun with it. It's an entertainment product, and it makes watching games a hell of a lot of fun. So Cash the Ticket, follow it in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
You're back with Total Information AM. I'm Megan Lynch. The modern architecture of the 1930s to 70s in St. Louis wasn't simply about structures. A lot of it is tied to social movements and has also been linked to some failures. A new exhibit at the Mildred Lane Kemper Art Museum at Washington University in St. Louis explores those design agendas. I'm joined by Michael Willis, founder of MWA Architects in San Francisco and Portland. Good morning, and thank you for being with us. And we also have Eric Mumford, the exhibition co-curator. Thank you as well for joining us this morning.
Good morning.
So, Michael, you resided in this transformational time in St. Louis. Tell us about Pruitt-Igoe, Laclede Town, and what those represent to you as a resident of those areas.
Well, briefly, we moved to Pruitt-Igoe in about 56, so we were the first residents of our apartment. And we enjoyed it. There were eight of us, you know, two parents, six kids. And at the time, the Pruitt and the Igoe apartments were Pruitt for the black families, Igoe for the white families, but all the kids were together on the playground. We walked to Blewett School. We went to the Crunden Branch Library. It was, you know, what do you expect as a little kid? Walkable school and playing with kids in the neighborhood. And it didn't take long for it to start to crumble. It by 61, by my 10th birthday, we'd moved out. And it went from a new living experience to something that was falling apart in terms of management and how it was being managed daily. Laclede Town was a radically different experience because it was back to living in a village, not 11 stories, but 2 and 3 story townhouses, walkable neighborhood services, shops, coffee houses. I worked at the coffee house as a 14-year-old. Musicians, artists, writers, professors, and laborers. So it was it felt more like the neighborhood I was used to living in when we were little kids in Richmond Heights. So yeah, that it was a very different experience and didn't feel dystopian.
Eric, when we look at these types of developments and kind of the what came out of those? How has it shaped St. Louis in the years after?
Well, the whole period was really transformational nationally as well as in St. Louis, where national policy was to decentralize cities, that these had been rail-based cities like St. Louis. St. Louis was once the fourth largest in the U.S. It was entirely rail-based city until the 19-teens and 1920s. And planners decided that without really a lot of consultation, I think, with other people, that it would be advantageous economically and socially to move people out of the central city as much as possible and then rebuild it. And so that's the period of this material. So it involves not only these really quite remarkable buildings like the Arch and the airport, but also clearances of lots of the city, the Mill Creek Valley, what became Pruitt-Igoe. These were all existing neighborhoods that were bulldozed, pretty remarkably large scale, often, although not always, involving black residents who also weren't consulted. So that's left a long legacy, I think, that we're still trying to deal with. And the show is in part an effort to try to not to denigrate the great pieces of architecture here, but also to look at the social context of the whole thing. There was also, I think, a lot of highway building during this period, and that also was quite destructive, and we still use many of those highways.
Michael, I'm curious for you. You know, obviously you went into a career in architecture and now have a different perspective looking back on those experiences. Is it unfortunate sometimes that modern and modernist architecture is tied to some of these failures?
Well, I don't think it's the modern architecture that failed. A lot of the examples that I would show to my students when I would teach at WashU occasionally is the models that the U.S. architects got from Europe, which in many cases are still operating. They're still neighborhoods. They're not museum pieces, but they differed in radically different ways. They were smaller scale. They were connected to transportation, open spaces, shops. It feels like the neighborhood as opposed to an isolated box with little connection to everything else around it. So I don't think it's the modern architecture that failed. I'm looking out the window now, and I can see Council Plaza Square by the same architects as Pruitt-Igoe with the addition of Harris Armstrong, and I see things that we didn't have there. Color, balconies, material that anybody would want, and obviously since 1957 or 8, it's still here. But Pruitt-Igoe was gone in 72. So I don't think it's the modern architecture that failed. It's the understanding of how buildings connect to neighborhoods.
Eric, as you were planning this exhibition, talk a little bit about, you know, how you determined what was featured and kind of the storyline that you're going to take people through.
Yeah. Well, a lot of my work here, historical work, has been based on the work of others, Esley Hamilton, notably, other local historians. And so we already had a kind of local canon of works that many of us thought were important. The work of Harris Armstrong, Eric Mendelson's former synagogue, now the Center of Contemporary Arts, the work of Minoru Yamasaki, who designed the airport, Gio Obata, who had been his assistant and then went on to do the Priory Chapel out in Crevecoeur. So we already had a clear sense, and many of these are fairly well-known projects, at least to people in architecture. The challenge was presenting those in the exhibition in this larger context of social and spatial change. And so that's how the exhibition came to be organized.
It's not just about watching the game. It's about betting on it. I'm Mike Valeni, and on Cash the Ticket, Jim Costa and I break down every college football and NFL matchup like it's the last game we're ever going to watch. From the best bets to the sneaky underdogs, and of course, as my co-host likes to say, the value. And the one thing we're not going to do is pretend we're professionals. We have fun with it. It's an entertainment product, and it makes watching games a hell of a lot of fun. So Cash the Ticket, follow it in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.